You're listening to Generation AI
from LivePerson.
You're listening to Generation AI from LivePerson, the show where technology, business, and humanity meet. Whether it's innovations, solving today's problems, or the next big thing in AI, we're here to decipher the real-world ways that you can put it to work in your business. It's time to go beyond the tech specs to find the humanity that lies beneath. Let's get started.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to all of our listeners to another episode of Generation AI. I'm Ruth Zive, and I'm joined today by my colleague and co-host, Joe Bradley. And we are here to kick off a second season of the podcast, which is woohoo! Very exciting. Last year, we spoke to some incredible guests from Virgin Media, Equal AI, IBM, Zoom Info, TechCrunch, and we were just getting started. We have a very exciting lineup this year. And we're also going to bring a really fun new segment to the podcast that we'll be doing with our guests when we get their unvarnished take on what's bothering them or what has them super excited about what's going on in AI and CX or even life in general. So stay tuned for the end of this episode when Joe and I have our inaugural Hype It or Hate It moment. Excited for that. So Joe, today it's just the two of us. And we're going to dive a little bit into a publication we recently put out at LivePerson called The State of Customer Conversations 2024 Report. And as you know, this report is based on survey data that we gathered from thousands of consumers and business leaders. And it was really interesting to me. It sheds a lot of light on their true feelings about customer-facing AI. Everyone who wants to read it, go and visit liveperson.com. I think that's the best way to cover the findings is for me to share some of the stats and then we can discuss it. Does that sound good, Joe?
I love that, but I want to ask one question first, or I want us to think about one question together first, if it's all right with you. So Hype It or Hate It, I'm excited for it. As hard as it is to say goodbye to the AI generated music, maybe it's not that hard. I think this will be a good sequence for us, but here's the question I'd put to us. How often do you think we're going to see Hype It versus Hate It?
Interesting. I'm finding myself, even as I, contemplated this, as I found out about the segment, I'm much more inclined to hate. What does that say about me as a person? Like, am I a whiner?
I think it says that you are a person. And my guess is that it's going to be something like 75-25 or 80-20, Hate It versus Hype It. Because I think this actually relates to some of the survey stuff. I think that we're creatures that, like, it's just much easier for us to focus on the things that bother us or make us nervous or make us uncomfortable. That's built in. So let's see if that holds true for our guests. Maybe we'll have particularly optimistic guests, but we'll find out.
Well, I think that at the end of this season, we should reflect and do some math and figure out how that played out, because I think it's a super interesting observation, especially in the world of AI, where I agree with you, there's a lot of trepidation and skepticism. So maybe that's a good segue to some of the report findings.
Let's do it.
Okay, so the main finding of the report is that there's this AI gap that's brewing. And what is this gap? The gap is really that business leaders are surprisingly all in. They really are eager to roll out this technology and put it to good use. But on the flip side, consumers are actually quite skeptical. And the numbers behind that, it's 91% of business leaders that are feeling very positive about using AI in order to engage with their customers. But only 50% of consumers are saying the same thing, this finding was actually surprising to me. What was your reaction? What do you shed some light on this data point?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a couple things going on here that are worth thinking about. First of all, I think there's a hype hangover from, kind of ChatGPT last year. I think if we ran these numbers last year, you'd find, probably more like in the 60s or low 70s% of confidence. And second of all, it's still to me kind of astounding how much the attitude is progressing going back a few years. So if you go back to the attitude towards AI and chatbots in particular, back in 2021 or something, I think you'd find, folks that really believe this technology was nowhere near useful. And so that 50% also, there's an underlying current there that I think all this 91% of business leaders are catching, which is saying like, okay, like we're almost to the point. But I think that even the 91 represent or sort of like is a bit of an idealized picture in the business folks' minds. When I work with people who are about to turn this on for their customers, businesses that are about to turn this on for their customers, they start to get scared of this gap, I think quite naturally, quite strongly. And they all of a sudden are really worried about hallucinations that the system might have. They're all of a sudden really worried about mistakes that it might make or ways that it can be abused by users, because it's still not that hard to trick some of these systems, a lot more than they are when you kind of talk to them about the problem in the abstract. And so I think ultimately what we've got to find, or what everyone ends up worried about, are the consequences of negative experiences that can be had with this technology, and then the legal and regulatory ramifications of that. Because actually, nobody knows how that's going to work yet. It hasn't really played out in the sphere of public opinion or the legal sphere.
These are all great points. I thought about it a little bit differently when I first saw these findings. I think that business leaders are more bullish because from their perspective, they see this as cost-cutting opportunity. You know, whether it's to diminish headcount or drive greater efficiency, and you know, we're living in a world where that's a reality for a lot of business leaders, is they're trying to figure out where to cut costs. And so the fact that there is an opportunity that's underpinned by technology and that will help them to do that, I think is driving a lot of that enthusiasm. Of course, customers on the other side are on the receiving end of the technology, and a lot of them are battle scarred from prior experiences with chatbots that have not been positive necessarily. And so I think that there may be just some leftover skepticism or cynicism along those lines. But I agree with everything you're saying as well. And I'm not surprised to hear that, you know, you're very much on the front lines with the business leaders. And I think when it comes time to actually roll it out, the 91% is probably not representative of their true feelings.
It's just a different state of mind. It's like, are you asking me, am I going to use this technology valuably in the future? And do I have to? And is that important? The answer is yes. But then it's like, am I going to use it today? And what do I have to do to make it safe to use today? I think that answer, like they take on a just a different frame of mind when they're approaching that question. And I think they end up with a lot of the same skepticism that's driving the sort of only 50% level of interest or I guess, positive expectations from the consumers. Like they start to merge at that moment a little bit.
Yeah. It's almost like the closer to the consumer the business leader gets with the rollout, the more their enthusiasm is anchored in reality.
Yeah. I think they're concerned about the risk of creating that bad situation. And whether it's a legal problem or a regulatory problem or a PR problem or just a bad taste in customers' mouth that they could leave and then cause, you know, a degradation of loyalty to their business. Like all of those outcomes are outcomes that, you know, businesses should be concerned about. That said, the train is going, right? The train's moving out of the station. And I expect to see this stuff in 2024 in a very wide array of businesses. We certainly see a number of businesses turning this on either now or imminently with LivePerson. And so I expect to see it, you know, pretty broadly. I think 2023, we saw a lot of internally facing use cases. 2024, it's going to start to show up in the customer's world a little bit, for better or for worse.
Yeah. Well, it will be interesting to run this same research a year from now, which we will do, and take the temperature of both business leaders and consumers and see if that gap has been at all bridged. So yeah, let's move on to another finding, because there's a lot of goodness in this report. All of this is happening as we hit the tipping point for customer-facing AI. So we've got just over half of business leaders now saying that they're prioritizing messaging with AI over traditional customer service channels like phone or email or ticketing systems. So that's not what we've seen historically. Does this match up with what you're hearing on the front lines from brands?
Yeah, absolutely. I think this is one of those ones that, you know, for us, maybe at LivePerson, we've taken this bet a long time ago, or going back like 6 years now, that these messaging channels are the future. And it's been based on the way that we like to communicate with each other personally. And it's interesting. It's really interesting to me that it kind of like the way that is kind of finally turning all the way over is coming through this AI technology a little bit. And I think it makes sense when you look at what, you know, how people were introduced to the large language models last year and the chat interface there. I think it also very much makes sense when you think about the modality of communication itself, right? So in first of all, in messaging, I don't have the same expectations for response time that I have in a voice context. If I have to wait 5 seconds for you to respond to something that I said, and I feel like we're in a conversation, then that's a really disturbing and difficult experience for me. It's unpleasant. If I have to wait 5 seconds for you to text me back, that's pretty normal, right? In fact, that's kind of fast. I think you can really see why, as compared to voice, there's an advantage there. I think when it comes to things like email and other systems, it's the opposite way around. It's like you want the interactivity with the system so that you can make sure the AI is giving you the answers and the treatment that you need in order to solve your problem. And like 5 rounds over email, you know, would seem unduly difficult to get that, but you might refine your question and interactively through messaging and your needs in such a way that you start to get your answers. So it's a little bit of a Goldilocks situation, I think, for messaging is maybe the way I would describe it. What about you? What do you think?
I wonder if some of this isn't just a function of changing demographics, you know, that over time we're going to see the population of people that are most comfortable with email or phone shrinking, and the newer generation of customers that are only accustomed really to using messaging channels are emerging. And, you know, I think about my own kids who are, you know, range in age from 19 to 31. They would way rather message than pick up a phone. There's no universe in which they would choose calling. But when I think about my parents or my in-laws, they would never message. So some of this is going to happen just organically as the older population ages and the younger population, they become the real buyers and decision makers. So that could be part of what's going on. I agree with everything you said, but I think some of this is out of our control and is going to happen regardless.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think an interesting corollary to what you just said is that, you know, for certain brands and businesses, you'd expect them to run faster at messaging because their demographics are different. And I don't have enough data to hand to make the claim, but now I know kind of what like the next set of like investigations I want to do on, you know, at least on our data and on the other data in the industry. So I think that's right.
I was going to say, keep me posted as you dig into the data. It'd be interesting to see if we could slice and dice our own data along demographic lines and draw some conclusions.
Yeah. I mean, I think we could definitely look at targets for the brands and maybe the simplest way would be to look at brands as far as what they care about and then think about their mix and messaging. So I think there's got to be some level of demographic shift. We've been kind of preparing for that for a long time too. And it feels like that combined with the, you know, the unique capabilities of messaging here, which is like a mix of interactive, but not exactly synchronous conversation, you know, rich content availability, which these models can now, you know, start to purvey, right? Through multimodal models, you can start to give, you know, image-based content as well, right? There's like a host of options for the engagement strategy on messaging that are also much more powerful here compared to these other channels too.
For sure. So there was a lot in the report that was cause for concern, but there was also some good news. So here's one interesting data point. 2 out of every 3 consumers expect that the way they work with businesses will improve over the next 5 years, thanks to AI. So we're talking about a 5-year time horizon here. What do you think about that time frame? Is it too conservative? Is it realistic?
I mean, I hope that it doesn't end up taking longer than that, is I guess the way I would put it. And maybe I hope it's a little bit faster than that. And from what I'm seeing in behavior this year, I think it might be. And the basic reason is because the the technology is there to do useful things, right? It's available. It's possible for it to help you. It's not perfect. It can make mistakes. But if the time horizon extends out to, you know, 6, 7, 10 years, I think what that means is the industry as a whole is overly afraid of those mistakes and not aggressive enough in pursuing it. And for some reason, nobody is, right? Like what I expect that not to happen, though. What I expect to happen is there will be in each marketplace or rather in each marketplace vertical for these big enterprise companies. And sorry if I end up on that train a lot because that's our business, but in the each of those marketplace verticals, there's going to be some leaders that are going to show what really the value is here. And they're going to take some little bit of risk on the way to doing that. They're going to have to do it carefully. Otherwise, they might get kind of lambasted in the press or whatnot. But there'll be some that do it carefully, do it well, take the risks into account and mitigate them and have good plans and then show the world what's possible. And then they will like take a lead, right? They'll take a customer service lead for our industry that will, you know, make people relate to their brand differently. And they'll start to make a lot of their competitors really nervous. And I think the ice will break and you'll see a lot of businesses running at that point. And I guess my guess would be that that's when you start to see some really, you know, maybe some silly mistakes too, is the second comers who are like, oh, wait a second, like, you know, this bank went first and they're ahead of us and that's not good. Then all of a sudden they might rush in to this area and find themselves not taking the appropriate precautions and getting themselves into a little bit of trouble.
I think it could take 5 years or more for consumers to really know firsthand that AI is improving their interaction with brands. But I think we already see today behind the scenes so many ways in which AI is powering a better customer experience. I just don't know that the consumer knows that that's happening behind the scenes necessarily. So, I think that the expectation is when it's touching you directly, right? Like that's, I think, what the report was poking at. And I'd have to go back and see how the question exactly was phrased. But what I imagine is that consumers that responded to this question were imagining chatbots or messaging or voice bots or that direct to consumer experience, which I do think could maybe take 5 years to be in a really predictable, durable, reliable state where the customer had high confidence that their problems were being solved to their expectations. But I do think between now and then, there are so many ways in which AI could be leveraged behind the scenes to deliver a much more elegant, delightful customer experience. The customer may just not know that.
Well, yeah. I mean, I both agree and disagree with you. Like, I think that if the model is, you know, I pick up some AI and I drop it, you know, onto some knowledge base or website that my company has, and it just works out of the box, and like I never really have to touch it, and it's a great customer experience, I think that's more than 5 years away. I think there's too much complexity in what people really want to talk about with brands, and there's too much noise in the data that is out there for what the brands want to do about those conversations to make that experience good. But I think that if you're willing to invest a little bit, if you're willing to connect your people to the AI and create a little bit of feedback and a little bit of interchange between those two systems so that you can kind of govern it a little bit better and manage those conversations and know when the conversation's going off the rails and you got to pull it out and put it to a human or direct them to a website or something like that, then I think the brands that do that, and that's what I mean by getting in smart early, are the brands that are going to create really successful consumer experiences. And those are the brands that are really going to lead. I think the brands that do the first thing, right? Like, hey, give me that AI. Let me just like drop it down in the middle of my system and hope it. And I think it'll do a great job talking to customers because the models are great. Those are the ones that are probably going to create some really silly mistakes and not have a good way to come back from them.
That's fair. It strikes me that there's a question we didn't ask in this research. And that was, you know, it just occurred to me now, what if we were asking employees, is AI going to make your work better? And what's the time horizon there? Because that's a whole other group of stakeholders, even within the world of customer support, customer success, customer experience. You know, there are these workers behind the scenes who I think today are having their jobs immeasurably enriched and leveled up in some ways as a result of AI. So what would the time horizon be do you think if we had posed that question to that universe of stakeholders?
I think that's a good question. We should add it in the next one of these surveys. But I think it depends a lot. That one to me, here's my guess, will depend considerably on which type of employee you're talking with, right? And that will, you know, pivot on, you know, job type, demographics, a whole bunch of stuff. But like ultimately all that stuff will probably pivot on whether, you know, they're kind of seeing the AI as a tool for them in the first place or not. And if it feels like it's kind of like any technology, right? If you bring it out to your employees and it feels like a way to kind of control them and manage them and make it so, you know, it's like a clock punching time card kind of system where it's like, oh, okay, this is how the company like is tracking me and is kind of like, you know, managing my work. That's like really takes on one kind of slant where if it comes out as like, this is a tool and we built this tool to help you do your job in this way better. And here's how you use this tool. And you should give us feedback about when the tool is working and when it's doing a bad job, right? That second model, I think you'll see, you know, first of all, you see businesses that work that way get a lot more out of it. And second of all, the employees that are thinking about it is coming at them that way. I think it'll be a lot more optimistic.
I agree with that. Do you think it's in a shorter timeline, though? Would you still put a 5-year time horizon on that? Because I think that's going to happen faster.
I think that there's more experimentation in that domain that feels less risky to businesses. So we have chatbots today. We have more chatbots live today, for instance, that are doing internal use cases for brands where their employees are talking to those bots. Then we do have the external ones. So the external ones, as I mentioned, are really starting to turn on now. So I think there's a natural mechanism in which that works a little bit faster. Now, the resistance to that mechanism is that the impact of the internal facing use cases, like you've got the thing that's going to drive those and make them really fast is when you find those internal facing use cases that drive the same kinds of impact that the external facing use cases do.
Fair enough. Okay. We're going to close out this discussion about the report with a fairly open-ended question, and then we're going to get to our hype it or hate it segment. I want to know, you know, we started out talking about this AI gap. How do you think we bridge that gap? What do we need to do to help to overcome it?
You know, ultimately, there's a few things we have to get right. First of all, we have to think about this AI, you know, the AI application as a kind of product, whether it's an internal facing product or an external facing product. And we have to treat it with the discipline that we treat those products too. It isn't just because it's AI doesn't make it magic and doesn't make it being immune to being a tool. It just feels like it's immune to being a tool because it feels kind of human to us. There's a couple of mistakes that you can make that way. One is that the efficacy of these systems, like they sound so realistic, they sound so human. You can kind of get drawn into the fact that they can have more utility than they really have. So I think that's one whole class of problems is like, I don't, you know, think of this like a product, like a business. I don't apply the same basic tools that I would apply to rolling anything out and validating and making sure that it has value to this technology. Well, let me pause there too, though. Like, what about you? What do you think? What do you think of the big things here?
Oh, I would have said something similar. To me, it comes down to trust. And I think brands, you know, are excited about this because, as I mentioned, it's an opportunity to save money. It's an opportunity to grow productivity and efficiency. But that can't come at the expense of your customers' trust. You spoke a little bit about rolling these things out gradually and thoughtfully. And I think that's how you build trust. You know, I don't think it's a flip the switch proposition. And I think you want to do it in a way that's going to continue to validate that your customer is getting what they need and that you're not compromising their trust or loyalty in order to cut costs because, you know, that's short-sighted. So I think that's ultimately how you bridge the gap. And that's why I think a 5-year time horizon is probably not unreasonable.
Yeah. I think this is one where like I'm maybe like a little bit more bullish that there'll be some early brands that figure this out. And I'm excited about the fact that I actually do believe that if you get the perspective right, and you've got the humans in the loop in the right place, in the right ways, and you know how to, and you've thought about and have implemented a way to like kind of test and understand the quality of these systems that's a little bit rigorous, then I think you can move quickly. I think that in a lot of cases, it'll be, if you're right, Ruth, and you might be right, I think that'll come down to, you know, people either not seeing that they've got to take those actions around, you know, quality, human in the loop, et cetera, or seeing that as, or their internal kind of politics and the internal inertia of business processes slowing down their ability to do that, you know, based on fear mongering, you know, concern about the technology, you know, like there'll be some, there's some like sort of collision of interests like that kind of coming. And maybe that'll end up making everybody take that long a time frame. You know, I guess we'll have to see.
That's fair. We operate at LivePerson in the world of, you know, large enterprise. And so I think that those, you know, those friction points are very real, especially for big businesses that, you know, operate in regulated industries, for instance. Like it's easier for a small digital first brand, for instance, to take those risks and roll something out and get it right. You know, different considerations. So I agree.
Well, and that I think is in a nutshell why it's so difficult for enterprise brands, or it's taken so long for enterprise brands to do, you know, just a general transformation into digital anyway, right? That like, why are we still on the phone with big banks, right? Because of all these inertial concerns, because of all these regulations, which are all like, they're not wrongheaded. Like, of course you need to regulate banks. Like that's not crazy, but you know, it kind of adds up to this phenomenon that you see in a stickiness to the old ways.
Yep, I agree. Okay, that was some good discussion about the report. We are now going to move into our hype it or hate it segment.
And I'm going to hype first or hate first? What are you going to do?
I'm going to go first, if that's okay.
I want you to, but what are you going to do? Are you going to hype it or hate it?
You're going to find out. I'm going to first ask your producer, Brittany, to put 60 seconds on the clock for each of us. You can be positive or negative. And we have to be true to the clock. So I think Brittany's going to join.
Hi, everyone. Joe and Ruth, it's our first go at it. How are you feeling about this new segment?
I'm ready.
Very excited.
All right. Amazing. Keep up that excitement. Let's do it. Ruth, you're going to go first. As you stated, we're going to put 60 seconds on the clock. I'm going to let you know at 30 seconds and at 10 seconds when you have that much time left. You're going to hear the buzzer when it totally goes off. And then at the end, Joe, you're going to be able to weigh in on whatever Ruth is hyping or hating.
Sounds good. I don't have a time limit on my weigh in, or do I?
No, no time limit on the weigh in. We'll like give you a break there.
All right, good. This is not a debate.
No. All right. Excellent. Ruth, are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. Your 60 seconds starts now.
Okay. I'm in a bit of a hate it kind of mood, and I'm going to talk about those voice assistants like Google and Siri and Alexa, and I'm hating on them because I'm confused whether or not anyone uses these for anything other than setting timers or checking the weather, or sometimes we use it to settle disputes at our family dinner because we're sure somebody has a fact wrong. And what's frustrating to me is that like there was so much promise for these things, but like I haven't seen really any progress whatsoever, even with generative AI.
30 seconds.
Maybe I'm missing something, Joe. You'll keep me honest when you respond here. But for me, they don't do much more than take up space on my countertop. They often get triggered when they shouldn't, and that's annoying. And they don't even understand me half of the time. So I've connected my whole home to this device, and I had so much expectation, and it's really done nothing for me. And I hope that in a few years, we'll be having a completely different kind of conversation about these sorts of assistants. But for now, I just have so much hate.
Time's up, please.
Amazing. Perfect time. Okay.
That was well formulated. First of all, like that was a nice little arc for 60 seconds. I already feel like I shouldn't go today. That was really good.
You can pause.
So yeah, I basically think you're right. I guess I should nuance it a little bit. Like I think that technology, you know, particularly the Amazon work is like one of the world's great engineering feats around, you know, understanding sound and processing audio in a real environment. And we should not underplay like how valuable that's been. And the ASR side of this as well. Amazon has an amazing, you know, speech to text because of this. And there's a whole class of that problem that's like really important for humanity to have solved. And they really, you know, these assistants really led that way. So I think there's a lot to be positive about there. But like when it comes to doing useful stuff in your life, I totally agree. Like, I don't think they're that useful. They're kind of fun. Like, I set a lot of timers on it in the kitchen when I'm cooking. You know, that's pretty useful for hands-free for that, but it's very command and control oriented. It's not this like, you know, it's not the Jarvis that's like helping me, you know, learn about the universe and become a better person or anything like that, which is an application I'd love to have, you know?
All right, Joe, nicely said. How are you feeling about your next one? Now you're hyping or hating?
Terrible. Ruth did a great job, and I feel like I'm going to do a bad job, and that is like a sad place to be.
No, you're just following her lead. Look at it that way.
I'm going to see if I can be inspired by Ruth's dive. I'm going to set my own clock over here so I know how long I have, because I'm scared of being...
Actually, Joe, I have to step in and say, like, that's not allowed.
Well, too bad. I've got a phone. You can't stop me.
Oh, rule breaker.
You can still stop me, Britt. That's fine. I just need, like, the visual over here.
All right, here we go. Okay, you've got 1 minute on the clock. It starts right now.
All right, I'm in a hateful mood too, I guess. And I would like to hate on the way that people are thinking about the quality and you know, the performance bar for these new conversational AI systems based on large language models, because I think that we too often either do one of two things. Either perfection is the bar, which is not the bar for human interaction. It's not the bar for anything else that we do in business. Or the bar is like way too low. And it's like, wow, it sounds really cool. So this tool is amazing. And either one of those endpoints gives you the wrong picture about how to really solve this problem. Like, we need a new way of understanding the quality of conversational systems that conforms to the risks and the opportunities in the setting that they're put in.
10 seconds.
And we need technology and capabilities around to govern all that. And we need systematics at the regulatory level that can manage all of it. And if we get it wrong, I know I'm out of time. If we get it wrong in either one of those two ways, we're never going to solve the real problem.
You nailed it. Okay, Ruth, what do you think?
Well, first of all, it was very eloquent. So I think you beat me. But I sort of feel like your rant was like a backhanded criticism of my rant in some way. Sort of. If I understood it properly, like, you were saying that we shouldn't be too quick to judge, and we shouldn't be too quick to, you know, to draw a conclusion on the performance of these technologies. And here my rant was all about how poorly these technologies are performing. So maybe it was a good follow-on to my rant.
I respectfully disagree with you in the sense that, like, I'm trying to get at the efficacy of the LLM-based conversational systems more so than, like, general technology. Like, I think that's the stuff it's hard for us to evaluate. You know, I think your assessment, actually, I think it's quite the opposite, because your assessment on utility of these tools is dead on. And that's a fair dimension to assess them on. Like, I don't use this thing very much every day. It doesn't actually help me is a great criteria. Very realistic.
So maybe we complemented each other then.
Maybe we do.
There you go. Well, that brings us to the end of this episode, Joe. I am super excited to roll out this season. I know we've got some exciting guests planned. And I would encourage all of our guests, all of our listeners who tuned in for this episode, make sure that you go and subscribe to Generation AI wherever you get your podcasts. And we can't wait to speak with you all soon. Joe, anything to add as we close it up?
Season 2, here we come.
Woohoo.
I can't tell you how excited I am to do it and to do it together, Ruth. This is a lot of fun.
Same.
You've been listening to Generation AI,
Automating Better Business,
a show from LivePerson.
Never miss an episode by subscribing to the show in your favorite podcast player. Please give us a rating, leave a comment, and share the episodes you love. Until next time.